favorite scary movie. Have you checked the children?
Yeah, you may not be the only one that might need a restroom break later, Fwinster, because I've been drinking water and coffee all fucking day today.
Dude, same here.
That's good. I've had no water today. I am drinking tea right now, and that is the first equivalent of water I've had all day today.
You know when they say that, you know, when your, you know, urine is, like, crystal clear, that means you're, like, you're super hydrated?
Yeah.
Yeah, mine's, like, fucking, like, Fortress of Solitude clear. You know? Like, crystal clear. Like, all day, since, like, 9 a.m. this morning.
Wow. I'm really glad we're recording this, so everyone can know about your piss habits.
Oh, you're recording that, but you didn't record the sick-ass monster segue
that
Gwen
had? I got fucking yelled at for not recording, so yeah, I started recording.
I guess we'll have to settle for the piss segue.
I was not ready for that one.
I know, right? By the way, here's some sensitive medical information. Oh, fuck.
Oh, my God. Oh, man.
God damn it.
Whenever you guys are ready.
Yeah, let's go ahead and get started after that. Jesus Christ. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. Joining me, as always, are these two chuckle fucks. We have Anthony Fuentes. Hello.
And Chipotle.
And Phil Acevedo.
Hello. And in case you missed it, yes, I am steer clear. Steer clear today. Yes.
Very good. He's very well hydrated. I'm not.
We're both just burst from the scenes from a different orifice of each one of us. It's fine.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah, we did it.
Disgusting. All right. Let's...
How are we going to run that? Oh, wow, toilet humor right off the bat.
I know. Yeah. Toilet humor, guys. Really?
Literal toilet humor.
I thought we were above this.
Audience, I promise you, we are adults.
Yeah.
They're 8 years older than me.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can't hold it in because you're getting old now.
Yep. You know what's the worst, too, is lately, the older I get, the more I've been experiencing this. I didn't really experience this a whole lot when I was young, but now that I'm in my mid-30s, I get up way more in the middle of the night to use the restroom than I ever did before ever in my life.
Oh, yeah, it's bullshit.
This is riveting. Can we please go talk about The Host now?
All right, what are we talking about today?
We are talking about The Host from 2006.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. All right, so before we get started, have you guys obviously have seen it. Do we have any first-timers here seeing it?
First time right over here, baby.
Okay, all right. Mm-hmm. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah,
all right.
I've seen it before.
Nice. Cool. All right, cool. So, The Host. I'll get started off right here with a little bit of info on the movie, and then we'll shift it over to the Fwinster in a little bit. But first, The Host. Ooh. All right, released in July of 27, 2006 in South Korea, and on March 9th, 2007 in the US of A. And let's do a little IMDb synopsis here. Here we go. A monster emerges from Seoul's Han River and begins attacking people. One victim's loving family does what it can to rescue her from its clutches. That's all right. Synopsis. Story, huh? It's okay. Yeah. It's all right. Oh yeah. By the way, heads up to audience out there, man. We might butcher some names here, and just want to apologize ahead of time. But,
This happens every time we cover a Korean film, so it's...
Oh, yeah. So...
I can help.
Thank you. All right, this bad boy was written by Bong Joon-ho. Won Joon-ha. Yeah. Mr. I make my two Oscar statues kiss in front of the photos. Like, that's an iconic photo. Also written by Won Joon-ha and Chul Hyun-bak.
Yeah, that was great.
That's pretty good.
Thank you so much.
We need this guy for Tale of Two Sisters. That would have been perfect.
All right, and it was directed, of course, by our boy Bong Joon-ho, and it stars Song Kang-ho, the boy, Park Hae-il, Ko Ah-sung, and Byung Hee-bung.
Perfect.
Oh, my God.
I will say the disrespect here to leave out Bae-doona.
Okay, I am so sorry.
She's the sister.
She's not in the starring list?
No.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah. I thought I added her. She's the sister. Wait, she's not. Oh, God. Oh, I'm so sorry. I honestly thought without Song Kang-ho, besides Song Kang-ho, I seriously thought she was the other three names. I am sorry.
Nope. They do not.
I'm not really familiar with the actress, but she kicks ass in this movie.
No, she kicks ass. She was also in Sense8, if you watch that. So I'm just a fan of her, and I've been a fan of her since that, but she's also pretty popular in like Korean stuff. So, yeah.
Well, apologies to her. I'm sorry for leaving her out there. I did write this script, so I'm so sorry. I take full responsibility. That's all on me.
I like how you're so apologetic, but then the second Anthony Fuentes makes the typo, he's like, fuck you!
It's mostly because he has to read the typo, though.
yeah. I was just going to say that. All right, so let's get some money info here. The budget for this was 10 billion won, which translates to $10 million in the early 2000s USA. And it grossed $89.4 million in the USA, and no Korean numbers were provided in the research that I was doing, but in early September 2006, The Host was named South Korea's all-time box office leader, selling over 12.3 million tickets in a country of just 48.5 million people.
Holy shit.
Oh, that is an impactful movie.
Yes, that is big.
I like that, that's how they how they did that math. They were just like, we sold 12.3 million tickets.
And we only have this amount of people living here, which is, I'm terrible at math, but I want to say that's a third of the country's population.
About.
Less than. Fourth, a quarter?
A quarter.
Okay. All right. Cool.
Not bad.
All right. So, Fuenster, take us over here, please. Go ahead and take the wheel on this and get us educated on this, film known as The Host, directed by Bong Joon-ho.
We're doing a play-by-play off the bat, baby, starting at the surface. So, The Host opens in the year 2000, the Y2J year, there we go, with a military pathologist ordering his Korean assistant to dump all 200 bottles of formaldehyde into the drain that leads to the Han River. Not a cool, a lot of peer pressure there.
It was
abuse of authority.
Over
the next few years, random sightings of a large amphibious creature near the river begin surfacing. There's even a scene where a jumper is prepared to take his life off the Han River Mapo Bridge, a real life ongoing crisis throughout the history of the bridge, actually. Yeah, big grand bridges have this problem. But before he commits suicide, he spots something dark in the water. Oof. So, we're now in 2006, where we are introduced to Gang-du, an unmotivated and dim-witted man who runs a snack bar in a park near the Han River with his father, Hee-bong. He's pretty dim-witted, okay?
Yeah.
You know the popular term, he is me. He is me.
We all have a little of a Gang-du in us, I think, at some point in our lives.
Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah. Essentially, our heroes of this story are the Park family, as we later get introduced to Gang-du's daughter, Hyun-seo? Is that how you say it?
I was saying Hyun-seo.
Hyun-seo. And sister, Nam-ju, who is a national bronze medal winner in archery, and his younger brother named Nam-il, a former political activist and raging alcoholic college graduate. Yeah.
To be fair, college graduates are borderline raging alcoholics.
Oh, yeah.
Raging and both alcoholism just together, for
also,
sure.
Also, political activists. Like, college made me a raging political activist and borderline a lot of stuff.
It's so funny. I met Webster, like, immediately after college, too. So.
And I was mad all the time, wasn't
she
I?
She was. Yeah, no, we were okay. I think because we were both mad talking shit. That's what we were doing.
College will do that to a person.
College fucked me up.
But see, you know, you were right next to UCR, next to a baker, so you know how mad could you be?
I know, I miss bakers so much. So
wow, the baker's on Day Street. Wow.
Ooh, yeah. Ooh, bakers. Yeah. Had it last month. It was fucking amazing. Anyway. On a beautiful sunny day at the Han River Park, where Gang-du, his daughter, and his father are working the snack bar, people at the park spot a big, mysterious-looking thing hanging off the bridge of the Han River. Oh, no.
How were they the first people to notice that?
Yeah.
It's huge.
There's probably, like, a frisbee thrower who throws a frisbee and he goes, "Hey, bro, what the fuck is that thing over there?"
Yeah. It's just, like, something that crosses his line of vision and then it just turns into a whole thing.
Yeah.
They just look slightly to the left, like, "Oh, what the fuck is that?" Of course, when suddenly this large creature detaches itself off the bridge and begins an all-out attack on the people at the Han River. Yeah. Ooh. Mm. It's a chaotic scene as people run for their lives as this creature terrorizes the park. The creature brutally kills and eats innocent bystanders as some of the folks at the park try to kill it off, but they failed. They failed pretty hard.
Mm. The part where the person is just like listening to classical music and chilling and then just gets fucking decked.
Obliterated.
Like, that caught me off guard. I forgot about that.
She was
that.
just minding her own business.
Oh, yeah. Enjoying like, the day in the park.
She removes her headphones like, "What the fuck is going on?" She and turns around and...
Wasted.
Did you guys also notice a... you know what? I'm gonna save that for a Letterboxd review later on. We'll save it for later because somebody pointed it out when I was pulling out Letterboxd reviews, and I'm like, I'm so glad I was thinking somebody noticed that. Okay, cool, that was awesome. But yeah, we'll get to that.
Okay.
Coming soon.
Yes.
Stay tuned. But,
yes.
Yeah. But in this scene, there's even an American tourist who tries to help Gong Du kill off the creature, which obviously turns out horribly. So, yeah. When all hope is lost, Gong Du tries to get his family out of the park and as far away from the scary creature as possible. Now, Gong Du tries to grab his daughter's hand, but then he realizes that he grabbed the wrong person's hand by mistake. When suddenly the creature snatches Hyun Seo from the floor and dives back into the river, which was a scene that got me real sad. This is my first time watching it, and I was like,
I love that scene.
It's so good in slow motion.
Yeah, it's like in slow motion. She turns around, she goes, just gets snatched
and
away.
And then making like eye contact and just the slow motion, her just getting pulled. Yeah. So good.
The wrong hand part when he turns around. It's good camera work. It's very good camera work.
I was like,
okay, cool. They're going to get a... Oh, fuck.
Oh, it's the wrong...
That changes
fucking
things.
Yeah, it's the wrong little girl. It's because they fell. They all tripped and landed on the ground, and as soon as they got up, he just grabbed, like, the nearest hand that was by him and just realized it was the wrong person's hand, leaving little Hyun Soo right there on the ground by herself. Damn, that's rough.
Yeah, I like how the American tourist has such gumption, too.
He's
like, we're gonna fucking do it! And then
it's
just
like, let's fucking do it, man. You and me, let's go, bro. We got this.
Yeah, right.
Oh, man. Well, that was one major part that went down that day. Alex.
Yeah.
Talk to us a little more about what's going on here.
Yeah, let's talk about the aftermath.
Ooh.
So, later that night, there is a mass funeral held for the lives lost at the Han River. While the Park family grieves for the loss of little young Hyun Seo, the government makes a clumsy entrance and announces that everyone who came into contact with the creature will need to be placed in quarantine because the creature was the host of a deadly virus.
The clumsy entrance is perfect.
I wrote clumsy entrance because that scene was just beautiful. I was like, this guy fucking trips and he's like, I'm the fucking authoritative figure here. Yeah. Puts his hands on his fucking waist too.
And then the brother is just like, why should we listen to you? And then everyone's like, yeah, why should we?
Gong Du.
His family are placed under quarantine. Gong Du receives a phone call from his daughter, Hyun Seo. She says that she is alive and she is in a dark sewer. Gong Du, his dad, brother, and sister manage to escape the hospital and make their way to save little Hyun Seo.
Brilliant scene.
Yes.
Brilliant scene. Bong Joon-ho does... All right, so a lot of cinematographers and directors, they like to mess around with, you know, they got their own way of creating, you know, their own cinematography. But there's this really brilliant scene where the focus is placed on the nurse that goes into their room and realizes they're gone. And then it's like a shallow depth of field, and then it focuses straight into Gong Du's face. It's like, I mean, like, if you blink and you'll miss it kind of scene, but it's fucking really well executed.
Oh, see, I didn't even hit that.
Yeah. The focus puller on that was on point that day on set of The Host.
Gotcha.
So it's like, it's good, it's well directed, god damn it, it's well directed.
I know, he's just like, the camera works incredible, and I'm just like, it is incredible. I can't, I you're using all those fancy technical terms that I just don't know.
Look, the man's an Oscar winner for a reason.
Absolutely.
Which is like, movie looked good.
Yeah, I know, meanwhile, I'm just like, this looks good and I can't tell you why, but it just does. Meanwhile, Hyun-seo meets another little kid named Se-ju. Hyun-seo protects the little boy and finds ways to escape from the creature's sewer lair. After the Park family fails in killing the creature, Gangdu's father is killed due to Gangdu miscalculating the remaining shells in the shotgun, and Gangdu himself gets captured by the government. This scene is fucking heartbreaking.
That's another second act. That's another clumsy mistake that Gangdu does, and his clumsiness costs the lives of someone else.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
we'll get to it. So, as Gangdu is under observation by Korean and American doctors and government officials, Gangdu discovers that there never even was a virus to begin with. This virus, quote unquote, was made up in order to distract people from learning about the creature's origin. Conspiracy. The doctors went as far as lobotomizing Gangdu in order to silence him.
I love how this movie paints Americans. They're like, they're dumb and malicious. Like, and have authority. That's how we look to the rest of the world.
You mean accurately?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
When COVID was going down back in 2020, I was like, yo, like early stages of the pandemic, right? I didn't say this to anybody. I never put it. I'm damn well not gonna put it on the internet. But I was like,
but you'll say it on a podcast.
I was obviously wrong. But in the beginning, I was like, what if there is no virus? What if this is like The Host, when the fucking government is making this shit up?
And then it almost killed you.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm glad I was wrong. Well, I mean, yeah, I'm glad I was wrong. Eventually, ultimately, I ended up getting this virus.
But, pretty bad. You got it worse than all of us, actually.
Yeah. So, but yeah, like in the early days of the vid, I was like, yo, what if this shit is not even real, man? What if this shit? But then, like, conspiracy feel was kicking in, and I realized that being a conspiracy theorist in 2020 was just not cool. So, I'm just gonna shut my mouth.
I think my breaking point was like, man, yeah, what if they're doing to control somebody? I was like, wait a second, no, the government likes money.
Yeah.
And they're giving all their money to us so we don't break down.
Yeah.
Not a good strategy. Not a good way to get money.
Yeah.
So it's probably real.
So a little fun fact, the short film that I dropped in 2021, the render program, was literally a huge influence of that idea of a fake virus from The Host. I was like, so I literally kind of stole that from Bong Joon-ho. Sorry, Bong.
I had a much smaller budget, though. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's
I had fine. A way smaller. I used my fucking, the checks, the...
The stimulus
check, and that was the budget for my short film.
Wow, so, great. I just got a nice TV.
Oh, nice. Very
I don't know
cool.
what I did with that money. What did I do with that money?
I don't know. Something.
Well, it could still be sitting there. Who the fuck knows?
I made a short film. I made a... I was like, you know what? Let's do something, man. Yeah, fuck it. Nice. But yeah, anyways, so we're going to continue on this play-by-play. We're almost here. We're at the third act of this film. And this... is the final confrontation. Ooh. All right, here we go. Nam-il discovers the location of little Hyun-seo and relays this information to Gangdu and his sister. Gangdu manages to escape from the government, and all three siblings meet at the creature's latest location.
Okay, pause for a moment. Nam-il, like, his whole, like, basically tapping into his previous activist network was so fucking cool.
Oh, that was hilarious.
Like, and then it's just like, why is he like a little fucking super spy? Like, he learned that he knew how to like short out everything. And he was like, I'm gonna get away. And then like, he got away from like all of these cops. Like, it was incredible. Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was so cool when he was running away and the dude that there's like a quick shot of the guy.
Hacker friend.
Yeah, his informant or whatever. Yeah. Like, he raises his fist in the air.
I like how his friend, too, was like, he's like, man, you're doing pretty good. He's like, I'm a salary man. It's not a big deal. He's like, but yeah, but you probably make like 70K a year. He's like, I have 70K in credit card debt. I know. I was like, damn, he just cannot shy away from commenting on the greater society. It's fucking awesome.
All right. Meanwhile, the government announces to a large group of protesters that they are about to release the deadly toxic chemical called Agent Yellow into the river in order to finally take down this creature.
Ah, yes, because that'll work. That always works.
Take him down. Do your stuff.
Take him down. Do your stuff.
Do your stuff.
So, once again, it's a chaotic scene at the Han River as the police, protesters, Agent Yellow, the Park siblings, and the motherfucking creature all gather to have one last hoorah. As the police release Agent Yellow into the air, the creature gets stunned. Alright, and this gives Gangdu the chance to pull little Hyun-soo and Se-ju out of the creature's mouth. But, unfortunately, little Hyun-soo is already dead. And even though she was still clinging to Se-ju's hand, who is still alive. I thought that was a heartbreaking scene.
That was so
that
sad.
That sucked, like, because, like, this whole time she was still alive, and, like, at the very fucking end, she, like, doesn't make it. Mm-hmm. That blows.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So, enraged at his daughter's death, Gangdu goes all out on the stunned creature. Nam-il, Nam-ju, and the homeless man all help Gangdu take down the creature once and for all. And thanks to Nam-il's experience as a political activist, he and the homeless man set the creature on fire with gasoline and Molotov cocktails. but, this is like one of my favorite parts of the whole movie. Mm-hmm. Nam-ju with the all-time chance at redemption, fires an arrow straight into the creature's eye, ultimately setting the creature on fire. And finally, Gangdu impales a pole into the creature's fucking mouth. The creature is finally dead.
Yeah.
So there's a couple things that I absolutely adore about this scene. So Nam-il spends a good chunk of the film basically just shitting on Gangdu for being a fuck up, right?
Yeah.
And at the moment that it mattered most, Nam-il fucked up and dropped the last Molotov cocktail. And like he realized that like he couldn't set it on fire. And then and then also at the same time, we get like a great, like you said, moment of redemption. For Nam-ju, who sticks it on the end of, sticks the little lighter at the end of the arrow and shoots it straight into the eye of the creature. It's a fucking incredible sequence.
And so and we say redemption because earlier in the movie, she was actually on TV competing for this archery.
It was the national title.
There you go. And the clock is ticking, and she like hesitates to the point where she like missed her target. She didn't even shoot the arrow because of like all the overthinking or overcalculating. So she got what, bronze?
Bronze.
Yeah.
Even though she hit two bullseyes in the
Yeah. So like I thought it was a beautiful moment for her too, cuz I was like, dude, she's got all this emotion. Her niece is dead. So I was like, so she was like, fuck this. I'm killing this fucking thing once and for all.
Oh yeah, Britannia and, agrees back there too.
Yeah, Britannia.
Great scene. Great scene.
She's been chatty today. Sorry, guys.
No, it's all good.
She's part of the pod too.
She's the
guest host, Britannia. Yeah.
There you go. All right. So, as the film approaches its ending, some time has passed as we see a freshly cut Gangdu with his inherited snack bar near the Han River. And this time, armed with a shotgun, he hears a strange noise near the river, but then he dismisses it. Gangdu prepares dinner for him and now his adopted son, Se-ju. And they watch the news, but decide to turn off the news as the government was stating the aftermath of the incident with the creature was all due to some good old misinformation.
Oh, I love seeing like 2006 predict something that's going to happen 14 years later.
That's why I was thinking this shit early, like February 2020.
Yeah.
As soon as the lockdowns happen, I'm like, oh, it's the fucking host, dude. It's the host.
Well, okay. I mean, I don't know if we're going to talk about it in discussion, but there's like a scene where it's just like symptoms, like look like a cold, and there's a scene where everyone's like next to someone who's sniffling and acting like they're gonna like fucking, I don't know, it just it reminded me so much of COVID, like pandemic, when everyone just was panicking because they didn't know what to do, and like rightfully so, but like still it was
okay. He sneezes into a puddle, and then the fucking
he hocked a loogie into a puddle.
He hocked a loogie into the puddle,
and a bus goes by and splashes everyone, and everyone just starts screaming.
I thought that was a brilliant scene.
Brilliant, exactly, exactly. Yeah, wow.
I was watching it, it gave me so much 2020 vibes. And,
absolutely.
And, which is crazy, because the first time I did watch this was also during lockdown. October 2020.
Oh, it's a good pandemic movie for sure.
It's a very good pandemic movie.
Damn, I feel like you actually told me about it during that time, but I never actually got around to watching it.
I did tell you to watch it, Anthony, and you didn't fucking listen to me.
Yeah, we got there eventually. We're good. Anyways, background. Background information. So,
give us some background info, Fwinster.
Due to the success of Bong Joon-ho's Barking Dogs Never Bite and Memoirs of Murder, this film was given a generous amount of 10 billion won, which was huge. By industry standards. So, yeah, I mean, he earned it. Like, a good amount of the filming for The Host was shot in the real sewers of the Han River instead of a set. The cast were instructed to receive tetanus shots by production medical officers.
Damn,
that's a good... Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Looks legit. When it came to special effects, the creature was designed by Chin Wei Chen. The modeling was done by New Zealand's Weta Workshop, and the animatronics were by John Cox Creature Workshop. The CGI was done by The Orphanage, a visual effects studio in California. He went international for this bitch.
Yeah. Also,
may I just say, for 2006, pretty good visuals, or video, I agree. Pretty good CGI. Yeah.
Not bad.
For
not
2006, bad. It could be way worse. Yeah.
This thing could have fought Optimus Prime and looked better than Optimus. In January 2020, at the Santa Barbara International Film Festival, Bong Joon-ho discusses inspirations for his monster film. Quote, "I was really inspired by Steven Spielberg because when he created Jaws, the Universal Studios created a model of the shark which malfunctioned often. And that's how we came up with these directing ideas to overcome these limitations with special effects. So with The Host, I welcomed the handicaps I had and I tried to overcome them." Look at a little film buff over here.
Yeah, like if I can go a little more deeper in that, when he was talking about that, he was saying that they didn't know how to approach it at first. They were going to go CGI, but they just didn't have like a reference or nothing. So when it came to like shooting the actual scene when the creature is attacking people at the Han River, he was literally used wide angles, because he was just like, okay, this is where we're gonna put the monster right here. And there were just like, there was no green screen, some guy in an all green suit, there was no tennis balls, nothing like that. It was just kind of like, we're gonna aim for it and hopefully it comes out good in post kind of deal.
Okay, renegade fucking way of going about
it. Yeah, yeah. So, that was it. So, Alex, talk to us a little bit about how people received this fucking movie.
Hell yeah. Well, kicking it off strong, when The Host made its way to American soil, a little-known director, Quentin Tarantino, stated at the time that this was his favorite movie of the last 20 years.
Who the fuck is Quentin Tarantino?
I don't know. And...
some pervert.
I know, right? And even more importantly, in 2006, a young Philip Acevedo was invited by his Korean bro, Kim Tran, and his fellow Movalian, Bryson, to come over to his house after school to watch a DVD copy of The Host, thus introducing him to Korean cinema. And I think we should all give Kim Tran a big thank you for molding Phil into the man of cinema he is today.
Way to go, Kim.
Like,
read it.
Little where Kim, would I be without Phil? The world may never
know. I love when it's my turn to write a script.
Meanwhile, after that, the host is quarantined with a 93% Rotten Tomatoes score and a 72% audience score. And then let's dive into everyone's favorite Letterboxd. Mm-hmm. Especially Phil's. Phil's favorite website ever, Letterboxd. Yeah.
It's my favorite time of the podcast.
Yeah. if on Letterboxd, the host has an average 3.7 out of 5 stars out of 157,000 reviews. So pretty high.
That's super good. That's one of the highest ones. Holy shit.
Yeah. That's pretty fucking that's what I said when I was pulling that up. I was like, oh shit.
Yeah. Mm. Karsten with 4.5 stars says, quote, "We'll consider not dumping chemicals in the river moving forward."
Yeah. Yep, same.
Yeah, right. Branson Reese, with no stars but worth a mention, says, "Early on, when the Steve Buscemi character is attacking people in the park, there's a quick shot of a dog just going to town on its owner. Seems unrelated to the monster. The dog was just looking for an opening to kill its master." Right on.
That's the scene I was talking about earlier. I haven't seen this movie in a while, and when I remember spotting this when I first watched it, and I totally forgot about it. But there's literally, like, I want to say 2.5, maybe 3 full seconds of this going on. Maybe not even 3 seconds. But it's, like, a really quick shaky cam shot. The monster is attacking people at the Han River, and you just see this dog attacking his fucking, like, his master.
Yeah, I remember seeing that, too, and I remember thinking, what the fuck is up with that? Like, what's the point here? Because that's right after that poor girl gets fucking decked by the monster unexpectedly. Yes.
That's good stuff.
Finally, Felipe, with 4.5 stars, says, quote, "Me at the beginning of the film," funny monster movie, "me at the end of the film, fucking crying."
Oh, that's funny. Which, and by the way, Felipe, that's not my father, by the way. He's just a dude named Felipe on Letterboxd.
Yeah, I figured it wasn't Felipe, your father. Unless you went up to your father and was like, "Hey, have you seen The Host? If so, what are your thoughts?"
hey, funny monster movie, me. Fucking crying.
Also very similar, because the end of the movie is so bittersweet, because like, it took his kid dying for him to become a better dad, and like, that kind of made me a little salty, but we'll get into it, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, and that's where we transition to this part of the podcast. The title is called More Than Just a Monster Movie. So it's quite obvious that The Host utilizes the, you know, the quote-unquote humans are the real monster trope. Many fans of this film can even say that America might be the real sewer monster here. The film was inspired by a real-life case in the year 2000, back to the Y2K thing, or should I say Y2J, where a Korean mortician working in a U.S. military base in Seoul was ordered to dump a large amount of formaldehyde down the drain, causing an ecological controversy. And this, of course, pissed off Korean citizens, and they even formed an antagonism towards the United States. So this was a real, happened. This was a real fucking thing. This really happened.
Yeah, this is the same time as like the burning pits in the military also. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not like they cared about U.S. soldiers or let alone international citizens.
Yeah, of course, in the real case, you know, a big amphibious monster wasn't, you know, formed or anything like that. That we know of. That's very true. Or maybe this real monster is still kind of forming, you know? It maybe takes a long few years to form.
Or maybe it actually was a mutated pangolin that made its way to the Chinese markets just 2 decades later.
I heard about that.
And then, who knows?
Okay. So, what are you eating? You got some chips there or what?
No, I was fixing my headphones, sorry.
That's all right. I was going to say...
ASMR headphone noises.
Yeah, sounded ASMR headphone. All right, so... in The Host, when we see the American doctor order his Korean assistant to dump the formaldehyde down the drain, we are literally seeing a metaphor of the relationship between America and Korea, South Korea. America is the quote-unquote great power influencing the smaller power, as the American doctor tells the Korean doctor what to do. The Korean doctor protests at first, but the American doctor's influence, of course, overrules. You know what? I'm just going to get into it because I was like, yeah, it's not really... Also, in The Host, the deadly chemical known as Agent Yellow is a reference to Agent Orange.
Now, very on the nose.
Oh, yeah. Now, Agent Orange is a chemical herbicide produced in the U.S. in the 1940s and later used by the U.S. military during the Vietnam War. Oof. In addition to environmental damages, Agent Orange exposed nearly 4 million Vietnamese people and tons of cases of leukemia and lymphoma to not just Vietnamese people, but U.S. military vets as well.
Real shit here. As they, we just talked about the burning pits and all that too. So yeah. Again, they don't care about their own people anybody.
Furthermore, the U.S. military even exposed Agent Orange to Korea during the DMZ conflict in the 1960s. So yeah, lots of references in this movie. So, but Bong Joon-ho has gone on record and say that The Host is not an anti-American film. But the creature itself can represent a duo effort by the American government with its influence and the Korean government with its complicity.
So, but not anti-American because our administration is a bitch.
Pretty much. Yeah. So aside from the political satires, there's, you know, a lot of interesting things that go on inside the characters. So, for instance, growth and empathy. Aside from its references to real-life crisis and political satires, The Host features a beautiful story set inside the Park family. Gong Doo's brother and sister, they both see him as, like, this clumsy, lazy, and pathetic buffoon. There's a beautiful scene here. The scene where Gong Doo is passed out asleep while they're looking for little Hyun Soo. Gong Doo's father explains to his two other children to look past what they see in Gong Doo, to not judge him from the surface level. And he even reminded them to look at his past and see what made him the way he is now, and to look at his character before scolding him.
I love that scene because he's like, I didn't nourish the boy when I was at my worst. And clearly all the males in the family have an alcohol problem, so it's kind of interesting to see, like, it's a legacy thing.
Yep. There was, like, a sense, like, you can feel the guilt coming out of the grandpa, like, for sure. Also, if you notice how Hyun Soo looked out for the little boy while being held captive by the creature, and at the end of the movie, Gong Doo adopted the same little boy, right? There is this father and daughter thing going on where they're both separated during different times of their lives. They both took on the responsibility of protecting those in need. They both saw a small boy without a home or a family, and they took him in because regardless of the horrors going on in the world, they are still good people. And there's a little poetic in there, you know? Yeah. Obviously, The Host is an emotionally driven piece of art. That's why I love this fucking movie.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Mm-hmm. I like, we've talked about it before, but also, you can't help but also think when you're thinking about emotionally driven, like, spooky movies, Train to Busan also.
Mm. Yep.
When it also comes to Korean cinema. Like, they just know how to make it, like, equal parts spooky, but also just, like, you want to cry by the end? Because we'll make you cry by the end.
Oh, yeah.
It's also one of those things too where good analysis, by the way, Phil. That was really really nice. I really liked it because I didn't expect to get hot regarding the political nature of our relations with foreign affairs. So that was a nice little extra for the episode right there. But I mean, to be able to do that and tell a very compelling emotional story between a father and daughter, like a family generation, is is brilliant. It's a great movie for that. That just takes talent. That takes a lot of talent.
What I really love about this movie is that, like, anybody can watch this movie and still have a good time and just see what's, you know, surface level, right? But if you go, you know, beyond that, you get even more gold, you know? If you just, you know, this is one of those films. Bong Joon-ho does this pretty much in all of his films, where he'll tell a story that you can, I guess, label it as simple, I guess, easy to follow. But there's so much meaning in there, for sure. He's one of those filmmakers that just packs it with a whole bunch of, like, you know, little buried treasures.
Okay, so I see it not in the discussion question, so I'm going to just slip it in now.
Yes.
I also watched...
Way to go, okay. Slip it in, Webster.
Yeah.
We consent.
Oh, good, I'm glad. That's important and necessary. I watched Parasite for the first time during 2020 as well, which was a bad time for me to be watching it.
Oh, yeah.
Friend of the podcast, Caitlin, I was texting her as I was watching it. it, and I was just like, you know, I have this fear of someone, like, living in my house while I'm not there. And she's like, good, compound that. But that just put me on a track, like, of just, like, being really, really fond of Bong Joon-ho's work. Mm-hmm. Because, and then seeing, oh God, the actor, what's his face?
Song Kang-ho. Yeah.
Seeing him in both of those movies, just in vastly different roles.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Was just fucking incredible to see. And just also shows his range as an actor. Cause I also know he's also like a very well-known actor in South Korea as well. But yeah, just, fucking cinema, dude. I'm doing the hand gesture.
No, for real. Yeah. That's why I was like, I know it's not Monster May yet. I think this is kind of like a little preview to Monster May, if we can.
I think
but
so.
Yeah. I just wanted to start off. I was like, you know what? Well, yeah, let's hit him with The Host. I fucking love that movie. I remember, when I first watched it, I was like 17. You know, me and two other homies were at Kim's house, and, you know, his sister brought it from South Korea, actually.
Oh, wow.
It had English subtitles and everything. It was really cool. So, like, because I'm not sure. I think it was, like, barely about to hit theaters or whatever. But Kim already had the fucking DVD. I was like, let's throw it on. Fuck yeah. And then so I just thought at the time, 17-year-old Phil thought it was just a really sick-ass, you know, monster movie. You know, I had no idea who Bong Joon-ho is or anything like that. I just thought it was a sick-ass movie. I loved it. And, watching it in college again and watching it, like, in my 20s and then 30s, I was like, yeah, this movie fucking rules on so many levels. And,
Oh, but, yeah. Such a weird movie.
Well, we've already started talking a little bit of thoughts on this movie, but if you guys want to talk more about it, by all means, any thoughts on The Host?
I mean, yeah. I mean, to me, you bring up a very interesting tale, like, you know, with your friend and then seeing it before it officially came out. We had a very similar situation with Battle Royale. Like, having one of those friends. Yeah, seeing it before even most people knew about it because you knew somebody that knew somebody back in the early 2000s. But I can see The Host. Like, you know, foreign cinema was not so prominent, I think, culturally at its time in 2006. Like, it took a while for us lazy ass Americans to go out of our way to find some fucking, you know, some real gems out there for these kind of movies. Limits to Oscar stuff, but I mean, if you're gonna do it, like a movie like this, it's a good, I think it's a good through line for Americans. Like, it has such a simple story, like you said earlier, but it's also, you know, at the end of the day, it's very, very meta in a lot of ways, which I think teenage us will enjoy the monsters, but older us is like, bam. We've been fucked for a long time. We've been fucked for a long time.
Dude, seriously. No, man. It's it could cause a lot of anger, too, because, like, you're watching this post-COVID, and you're just like, fucking governments, man. Oh, I swear to God.
I know. They'll change. And they're not going to change. It's going to... Shit like this might happen legitimately or illegitimately, but there's weight to, like, building a narrative that keeps people afraid. And you know, whether it's, what is it? There's some politician that said it's like, even if no matter what the situation, never waste a crisis. And this is clearly, one of those instances. And this was before, or this was way later than this movie, when this movie came out. It was, I think, during the Obama administration, but yeah, it's funny that lesson was
never
being discussed.
Never waste a crisis. Jesus.
Never waste a crisis. That came directly from a politician.
Of course it does.
Fuck it.
Yeah, that's how they think, man. And it's good to see that other nations recognize their bullshit pretty easily. So, yeah, that's my thoughts. I like the broader implications of this movie.
Yeah. Alex.
Yes.
Let's hear some.
So the last time I watched this was October of 2020. I did it. I watched it for one of my 30-day or 31 days of horror like challenges that I did, and the only year I've been ever been able to complete it, because October of 2020 I wasn't doing anything because there was nothing to do.
Say it with less tears in your eyes, Webster.
Hey, I remember that Halloween I watched David Gordon Green's Halloween, and I ordered Red Robin. It was a great Halloween.
What a time. I want to do that this fucking year. That sounds great.
It was a good good time, but I was just like, it was like one of the first times. It was like Halloween was on like a Saturday that year. Like I was just miffed because I was just like, I should be out getting fucking plastered.
Yeah. Anyway. Red Robin. I haven't had one of those in a long time.
Yeah.
The Robin fries.
I haven't in ages either. I was just like, this is what sounds good. God damn it. Anyway, Red Robin aside, I loved this movie. It was very good. I think I got a lot more out of it to rewatch. I will say, I think it's a touch too long. That could just be my American sentiment of needing things to go a little bit faster. But yeah, I think I think things could have been trimmed down a little, but I think that also is just personal preference. But I still fucking love this movie. It has so much going on. Like you said, for such a simple storyline, there's still so much like interpersonal drama, and there's so many other like subplots that it just makes for a really evocative story. What else to say that hasn't already been said, but very much enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm immediately turned on by multi-layered films.
Sexually, but thank you for clarifying.
No, when it comes to like multi-layered films like this, it's got my attention right off the bat. Like I don't care about budget. I don't care even if it was like poorly shot. If there's like bigger, deeper meanings in there, I'm in. I'm down. But
turned on sexually, bigger, deeper. Look at you fucking. Mm-hmm.
Oh man, dude, I'm a cinema super freak, dude. What can I say? All right, if I could, next question. All right.
Okay, yeah, just move right along.
If there's anybody in this movie that you guys could connect with, who do you guys connected with the most here? Like maybe not even connect, but who did you fucking feel the most empathy for? Who did you just had like, you know, who were you more pissed off at? Who's your favorite fucking character, pretty much?
I mean, Gong Du, obviously, to me, gets the most emotion because he's, you know, you're really vested in his character, essentially. Mm-hmm. Also, his brother, though, I don't know, something about him continuously, like, being wrong and getting shit on, despite having a superior attitude. Sometimes you need a character like that, you know? So I think his, both of his, them...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
His college brother, yeah.
Yeah. When you mentioned, it's really interesting that you talk about him because, like, I thought, like, he seems like the, I don't know if he's the older brother or the younger brother, but, like, he just seems like the kind of dude who's, like, everything that my brother is, Gong Du, I'm trying desperately not to be, you know? And he ends up being him when he fucking misses the Molotov cocktail. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, there you go. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he might be a little more on his feet more. He might be more, you know, active. He might be a lot better socially than Gong Du, because Gong Du is just the type of, Gong Du seems more introverted when Namil is definitely more extroverted, you know, and mine was definitely the sister.
Mine too.
Yeah, the sister was fucking awesome.
Yeah, I think the sister was awesome, and also, like, she had her own, like, just her whole progress as a character. Just like learning to not hesitate and do, I don't know. That was really cool for me to see also.
Yeah. Beautiful scene for her. That was like her moment right there for sure. It was fucking awesome. Okay. Here's a fun question right here. With Monster May approaching, as we mentioned earlier, give us your favorite monster, movie monsters. Or should we, you know, give us a little preview of your favorite movie monsters? We can go as far back as, we can go as this creature from this movie, to the fucking Predator, to a Xenomorph, or to the Fwenser on a drunken tiki bar.
Oh, yeah, it's a terrifying monster, that one. God, that Terror in Tokyo from San Diego, Jesus Christ, okay. I was telling Phil about that legendary San Diego hangover that we had.
Oh yeah, how I had to drive back because you were too hungover.
Oh yeah, me and Kathleen destroyed ourselves. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hey Kathleen, freaking guest of the show. you know, I think one of my favorites, and I mean obviously he's had a whole series, but in this particular movie, the Godzilla from Shin Godzilla is on a whole nother level, I think, compared to even the other ones. Like, that to me, it's... Oof. When I show that movie to people, I'm just... You can see, like, oh, it looks kind of lame at first, and then at the end, it's like, terror, holy fuck. Like, that to me is a good, very, very good monster. Also, the smart sharks from Deep Blue Sea, you know? Because what the hell? Like, that's just absurd.
That's fucking terrifying.
They ate
it.
Samuel Jackson. They ate him. A fucking shark ate him.
Spoilers. Spoilers for a movie that came out like decades ago, whatever.
Yeah. That has been memed to hell.
It's fine. No, I it's okay. I'll probably forget by the time we cover it. Maybe spoilers for what we're like covering in Monster May. Yeah, right. For me, just because I have such a nostalgic attachment to it, and I think it will always scare me to some degree, The Mummy from 1999's The Mummy.
Oh, Imhotep.
Nice. Imhotep.
Yeah. It always, I don't know, man. Well, also just like, The Mummy is, in my eyes, like a perfect movie. It can do no wrong in my eyes.
And you have all the protection you need from The Mummy because you literally have two cats in your apartment.
It's true. I have two cats
in my
apartment.
And that dude is scared of cats.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
So you're good. You're safe from for me,
they're scaredy cats.
Oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say, except that they themselves are scaredy cats and won't and run away the second there's a stranger in my apartment. But that's fine.
Well, they don't see like
too,
a
because it's coarse and it gets everywhere. Huh?
Oh my god. Oh my god. You just had to throw one in there, huh, Winter?
In there, yeah.
I missed it.
Oh, I said, and they hate sand too because it's coarse and it gets everywhere.
Motherfucker.
That's good. That's good. I'm going to go with Movie Monster. I mean, I love a good xenomorph. But I think I've always had a thing for the Predator.
Mm-hmm.
The Predator fucking is just the complete opposite of the creature from this movie, because the host creature, he's just like this big, dumb amphibian monster. Or maybe he's not dumb, because there's that scene where Hyun-Soo was trying to escape. And she wasn't sure if the monster was sleeping or not. And when she jumps, mm-hmm. a tentacle just freezes her. Like,
grabs her
like,
and puts
just,
her down, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was a brilliant scene, by the way. So we don't know. Maybe this creature is a little smarter than what we see. But the Predator is like the complete opposite. He's super intelligent. He's tactical. He's got some sick-ass tech with him. And he's got a sick ass laugh at the very end. Yeah, that was cool. And he mocks people. You know, he'll make fun of you. He's like a parrot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The ugly motherfucker.
Yeah. Exactly. All right, one more fun question right here. All right.
Yes.
Pitch me two human characters besides our heroes in this film that can take down this creature.
Humans?
Yeah.
Okay. Roman Reigns.
Movie.
Roman Reigns. This creature will be in the... will try to break his fucking... his streak and then nothing.
Oh my god. No.
I have my two.
Okay. Mine, one's definitely Roman Reigns. What are the two do you have?
Since we're going wrestling, Rhea Ripley and Buffy Summers.
Dang. Wow. Your guesses and answers are way better than mine.
Yeah, that's good. Buffy would do it too. I think
could do it alone.
Yeah.
Buffy Summers, an icon for the people.
Oh, damn, that's awesome.
Another human besides Roman Reigns? That's hard.
Very, very, you know what? I literally had two of them. I should have written down because now I forgot them.
Oh, you wrote the question.
I know, and I totally forgot to write down my answers.
I really don't even think we actually need two if Roman Reigns is in there, so.
Yeah, honestly, I was just going to say, oh my god, from Kill Bill, because I just saw it again recently for like the millionth time, the first one. Oh my god, the girl, the schoolgirl outfit. Oh my god, why am I blanking on her name?
Gogo
Yubari. Gogo Yubari, yeah. Gogo.
Oh, Gogo would be great.
Gogo would be good.
Gogo would be sick. And, you know what, dude? Casey motherfucking Jones.
There you go.
Yeah. Casey Jones.
I got it. I got one more. So it's Roman Reigns, but his manager is actually Harvey Keitel's The Wolf from Pulp Fiction.
My god. That's like good.
They will be able to take this creature out in 90 minutes, no less.
Oh, that's good. All right. Last but certainly not least, rate the host out of 5 canisters of formaldehyde. Fwenser, go ahead.
Man, this is a really good fucking movie. So I think I'm gonna be steady with it because I might rate it too high. I'm gonna have to watch it a couple more times. But for right now, it is a solid 4.25. Like this is a really, really good movie. Well filmed. CG is a little dated. It's a little long. Yeah. But I mean, other than that, like it's really you can't really knock it. It's just good. So yeah, 4.25. I really, really dig it. I think it's actually brilliant.
All right, Webster.
I had to just pull up what I rated it in 2020 just to make sure I was consistent, and I am consistent. This is a 4.5 for me.
Nice. There you go. Nice, yes. I'm just going to go a little higher. I'm going to go and say 4.75.
Well, respectable.
Can
totally
I do 4.5? Can I do 4.85?
Yeah, you can do whatever you want, dude.
All right, I'm going to go 4.86
if you want to. That's
you. I'm going to go 4.85. I really love this movie. Is it my favorite Bong Joon-ho film? Probably not. But it's the first one I got exposed to, and that doesn't mean anything. But it's like, you know, but definitely I fucking love this movie. I love revisiting it. It's always a fucking pleasure watching it. Mm-hmm. From the characters, the story, like I just love everything about this film. It's I'm going to say it, guys. It's cinema.
It's cinema.
It's definitely cinema. And it goes to show how consistent Bong Joon-ho is.
It's true. Yeah. Can I read my review that I wrote in 2020 about this movie?
Please.
Honestly, God bless this movie. Bong Joon-ho is a gift. Like, his ability to balance humor and horror is just chef's kiss. Yep. Also, I didn't know Bae Doona was in this, and she is ethereal as always. Anyway, great monster flick, great family drama, great horror film. Not so great at special effects, but it's 2006 and had a budget of $11 million, so I'll let it go. 4.5 out of 5.
Damn.
Hey, look at you.
So I am at least consistent about my thoughts about this movie. I don't know about other ones, but...
That's good. That's good. Hey, I love it. I love it. Well, that's all I've got, hosts.
Right. All right, I will pick up from here. Thank you, everyone, so much for listening. That was The Host from 2006. Next week, we're doing something a little different again.
I love it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was just like, pause for feedback. Yes, yes.
Are we? I can't remember.
We're doing the fucking review for...
bleep that whole thing out and leave the pause. Yes, we are. Yes, we are doing something different. Way to, yay.
Oh, for the love of God. Anyway, next week we're doing something fun. I'm on vacation next week, so we had to come up with something quick and easy in terms of content. So everyone, stay tuned for that. And then in the meantime, if you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest on all of our podcast shenanigans, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod, and we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. HORROR BLE People's Podcast. And you can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. You can find Phil on YouTube and Instagram at Phil Acevedo. And you can follow the network at Horrible People's Network on Instagram, which is HORROR BLE People's Network. We have some awesome programs over there for you to check out, not just horror related content if that's not your jam, although I don't know how you made it this far if it wasn't. On that note, thank you so much everyone for listening, and make it your goal to not dump formaldehyde down the drain today.
I fucked up already. It's fine.
Oh no. Bye, guys.
Later.
Peace.